That one, right? This one. Great. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you so much for having me here. I came in yesterday from the city of Seoul in South Korea. Hence, I have a little bit of a cold because I was taking this photo, which I'm having on the front of my slides, where I found a very nice walk to really take in the city skyline. But now I also take the consequences of that decision. But I need to be honest with you that the intention was not to take this photo to fill out the slide. It was just something very spontaneous. I'd like first to mention that I represent the World Blind Union, which is the global voice for the estimated 253 million persons who are blind and partially sighted globally. And we are based on 6 regional unions, whereof one is the European Blind Union, and we have member organizations in 190 countries. Today I will have a quick presentation on sustainable urbanization for all, and how organizations of persons with disabilities can and is at the forefront. I will start with discussing a little bit on urban trends and data, because first I like to recognize that cities today occupy less than 5%, actually 3%, of our planet, generates 80% of the gross domestic product today, but also consumes the most energy and releases most of the greenhouse gases. And as was mentioned before by our moderator, that by 2050, it's estimated that 70% of the world's population will live in urban areas. Already today, we are over 50%. And while 60%, and we also need to recognize that we, even though most of us live in cities already today, and we will grow to 70% living in urban areas by 2050, 60% of the land needed to accommodate that population growth in urban areas remains to be built. And currently today, we see a huge infrastructural funding deficit, which we'll have to fight for the years to come. 96% of urban growth will occur primarily in less developed regions of East Asia, South Asia, and Africa, where most informal settlements exist, as was mentioned before, but also where there's a higher risk of climate disasters. 1 billion persons, or around 15% of the world's population, experience some form of disability, and 80% of persons living with disability today live in developing countries, where there is often a lack of access to transportation, public services, digital services, including digital platforms, employment, health, education, and adequate housing. But of course, we have to recognize that many types of challenges related to inclusion of persons with disabilities and accessibility consists everywhere, no matter if it's in the global south or, as we call it, in the global north. Let's see, is it next slide? Yeah, it's next slide, right? Okay, great. Is it showing the first row? Okay, great. So with this in mind, I continue a little bit on urban trends and challenges, and then like to recognize, but if we imagine that 70% of the world's population will live in cities by 2050, we also need to recognize that at the same time, it's expected that around 2 billion persons with disabilities, or older persons, will be living in cities, thus requiring larger investments in accessible infrastructure. 20% of the poorest people are living in developing countries and who are living with a disability. And we have to recognize that disability is both a cause and a consequence of disability. And cities and how we design services and spaces can have a truly tremendous impact on how we break this cycle of poverty. Roughly 90% of COVID-19 cases occurs in urban areas where persons with disabilities, older persons, and persons from other where persons living, of course, intersecting these identities, of course, but also where persons from other socioeconomic vulnerable backgrounds are the hardest hit by the pandemic. indicating that what we thought was the reality before the pandemic was not, that it was truly indicating that we have not done enough to break systems of discrimination and attitudinal barriers. Also, last point, is that by 2050, it's also estimated that around 200 million persons around the globe will have to seek refuge in cities because of climate change. And this includes around 30 million persons who have disabilities. So we need to make sure that we are able to accommodate those populations, moving into cities and urban areas, thus putting pressure on us to design our services and spaces so that we can host them, so they can lead independent and dignified lives. So I'd like to move over a little bit to the top 10 challenges as we see it. And we have worked together with an organization called the United Cities and Local Governments. The United Cities and Local Governments is sort of the global federation for local and regional governments, and they represent they represent around 200,000 regional local governments, municipalities around the world. And in 2019, we worked together with some of our partners and networks and UCLG to support the United Cities and Local Governments to produce a milestone paper on inclusive and accessible cities. So the top 10 challenges I will now outline are taken from this policy paper. I do recommend, I will share the link after this event to the policy paper itself, which is available across different languages and different formats. And today I will elaborate on some of these top challenges. So the first challenge we see towards more inclusive and accessible cities for all relates to the participation of persons with disabilities and older persons. When we talk about engagement of persons with disabilities and their representative organization, is the fact that they are not always, and most often actually, not seen as success criteria in developing, implementing, and monitoring of urban policies, practices, and designs. That persons with disabilities in their organized constituencies are seen as experts in their own rights, also as technical experts. And often, there is a goal in a city or a municipality to provide accessibility for everyone. But most oftenly, it tends to be focusing on physical disabilities. So what many municipalities do is that they focus on what we can see, and thus they are installing ramps. But by working together with organizations of persons with disabilities, as one way, of course, is to bring in a greater diversity to the work of urban planners and designers, so that persons with disabilities can be true partners in the process. Also to really take advantage of the broad diversity they represent, so that practices meet the requirements we have in any urban development and design process. One challenge is that there is usually a lack of indicators to measure and monitor inclusion and accessibility. One challenge that many cities face today is about inter-agency coordination at local, but also at regional and national levels. Because systems can be truly, truly bureaucratic and siloed. And that does not only relate to accessibility, of course. Because many different agencies, departments, and ministries might have a role in the planning and design and master planning of cities and municipalities in one way or another. It might be in policies, it might be regarding building legislation, etc. All ranging from transport to provision of public basic services. And one project may require coordination between many different levels of government, as well as within the municipality itself. But all too often we see that when we talk about accessibility, that either it ends up being somewhere at the planning department or just seen as a social issue. But we believe that one challenge that many cities face today, as evidence has shown, is that there is a tendency to silo it. And of course, that includes regional governments as well. There is a lack of a common understanding of accessibility and universal design, as we see it. Because overall, there is a challenge relating to the gap around why accessibility and how to make accessibility happen. And Accessibility is not always seen as a human right, an enabler for inclusion, which it actually is, according to the Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. That accessibility takes time, is a luxury, and also something which is very expensive in context of limited resources. And that accessibility is not seen as something which benefits everyone in society throughout our different life courses, as we might acquire disability, as we are growing older, as we were children once. There's also a poor understanding of accessibility generally, but also universal design, and how it interconnects with safety issues, with gender equality, with resilience, with sustainability. We have seen that there is generally a general lack of adequate knowledge, training, and tools when it comes to accessibility and universal design. And this, of course, relates to the points I just mentioned. Because even the most accessible place might not always be according to the requirements and preferences of diverse groups. So we'll always have to be mindful that we need to make sure that we're agile and flexible to make necessary changes. And for that, we might also have to engage with different representative groups. As we see today, we have a lot of standards on accessibility. We have process standards on universal design. But we also see that even though all this guidance exists, there's limitations in implementation. And when it comes to adequate levels of knowledge, we also see that the international standards on accessibility, both at the EU level but also at the international standard organization level, is not always enforced in the way we desire. So what we see as a challenge is, of course, to tackle this and combat this for the years to come. There is also a challenge when it comes to inclusive and participatory budgeting in finance systems relating to disability inclusion and accessibility. Also, there is a challenge regarding generation of disaggregated data, also by disability. Often, cities, local and regional governments, national governments tend to collect data on a gender basis, or income basis, or type of profession basis, but rarely on disability. And what we have seen is that usually, when you don't have hardcore data on who are the persons with who identify as a person with disability, or what their access requirements are to live independently in their community, if we don't have that data, many use that as an argument saying that we don't know. We don't know what to do, we don't know where to start. But that can never be an argument not to take action to make our cities and local communities more inclusive and accessible for all. Soon done with the challenges. There is also a challenge when it comes to the provision of safe and accessible public spaces and services. Because our experience shows that there is a lot of missing links when it comes to what we call the travel chain, like how we get from point A to point B, for example, in a city. Ensuring that not only our streets are accessible, but also our services are accessible, that our housing is accessible. So it's an interconnected web of accessibility, which has to be focused upon to build more livable and accessible spaces. And although it's possible to make everything accessible, it might not always be affordable, for example, housing. It might not always be safe. It might be public transport. Or it might not always be adequate when we talk about accessibility, because maybe there is a system which works somewhere or practice, but maybe not somewhere else. So accessibility always needs to be fit for purpose. There is generally also a lack on adequate initiatives to fight stigma and negative attitudes. Because when it comes to the inclusion of persons with disabilities, of course, accessibility is something which is broad and can be a bit hardcore. But also when it comes to the rights of persons with disabilities, we also see that one of the greatest barriers to full inclusion is attitudes, it's perceptions of the diverse range of persons with disabilities. Then going over to point 10, I believe. Yes, actually. Very good. I don't see my own points there, so I'm just counting. So